Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly...
Do most of it?
No.
Okay.
Most of it? We do it all. We truly do it all. We do everything. All of it. Everything. More than just a podcast. We are brought to you this week by JK Moto Entertainment, which is your one-stop shop for all your track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at JK Moto Entertainment. Like I said, a lot more than just a podcast. I'm going to give my quick little warning that I sometimes give, which is that this could be anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, and I wouldn't want to sit in front of a computer, just watch it or have it up on my phone the whole time. So if you don't feel like watching, that's great. If you're here on YouTube, go click the link down in the description to our RSS feed, which will open you up to whatever podcast platform you listen on. If you're listening and you haven't checked out the YouTube channel yet, go check it out. JK Moto Entertainment. Tons of great stuff on there, I think, at least. I mean, I might be a little biased.
Only a little bit, though.
Just a little biased. Just a tiny bit. But we are back for round... We messed up last week, by the way. It was round five, 100%.
Oh,
somehow,
okay.
I counted and I was like, no, it's four. It was all definitely
right.
Five.
All right, so now we're back for round six.
Seven, eight, four.
Round 32 it is. And with that, the season's done.
Yeah, it's over. It might be at this point. It was a pretty telling round.
That the points gap? That's not over yet.
No, but there were definitely some big moves that didn't need to happen but did happen and made it a little interesting. We had a lot to talk about. Anyway, round six, MotoGP in France. Once again, another record turnout. They keep having record after record every year over in France for record turnouts, which is awesome. Great for them. Glad to hear it. But
I mean, sport's growing. That's what that means.
That's true. At least in France.
We got to get some of that action here.
We do. Which, contrary to popular opinion, maybe the new owners, Liberty Media or whatever, will help out with that. I don't know. We're not going to talk about Liberty Media. I don't want the drama. But anyway, go ahead and stick around for the intro, well, and for the rest of the episode after the intro, and we'll talk about MotoGP round six in France.
My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
You could drag your knee at 100 miles an hour.
On that note, we're back from the intro, back with our non-sponsor this week. May or may not give you wings, maybe. I don't know. Not sponsored, but keeping us alive. And, you know, we can't not talk about this real quick.
The Aprilia RSV4 1100 factory?
Yeah, totally.
It's good. It must be some new fairings, right?
It's just a graphics.
A couple new fairings?
Graphics. Yeah. It's like that dude that had the V4. Have you seen the V4S, the dude put R3 graphics on?
Yeah, is that same thing?
Yeah. It's some Aprilia R1.
The Panigale R3.
That's what actually, the R, and that's SV4 1100, and it says factory underneath. Mm,
definitely not Yamaha R1, right?
No, yeah, not even a little bit.
Couldn't be.
Hey, if you're new to the channel, this is called Stable B. This is where we do a lot of amazing things. Go check out the channel trailer, and I'll talk about Stable B a little bit in there. But we've been filming the podcast here for a little while now. It's pretty great. I like the atmosphere. We'll get some better mics at some point so we don't have so much echo. There's a lot of echo in here, I noticed. But anyway, what you're used to seeing in the background here is a motorcycle that I may or may not be racing this coming season, pending me showing up and racing it. What is not there right now is that motorcycle that is moved. It is still in Stable B. Stable B is a little bigger. Yeah, it's
right
that
there.
Way. we're staring at it now. It's a little bigger than it normally looks for the podcast. And this is actually a former Moto America bike. There's a little sticker. I think it's on the other side. But
no, it's right here. Frame number, yep, there's a number right there, 2016 Moto America.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, back in 2016, one Matthew Schultz, first ever bike that he raced in stock 1000, happened to be this exact motorcycle with a different set of fairings, but same motorcycle. So, kind of cool to have that in the garage. Since then, it has gone through a couple different hands and has ended up here in Stable B with us. And we will be doing some work on it. So, once again, subscribe to the channel and you can follow along with Matthew Schultz, former Moto America R1, owned by Beatonator, now rebuild project thing.
In progress.
Yeah, and we're also, I'll end up going through a little bit of history on it, kind of talking about it, doing a whole intro to the bike later on. So just a little shout out for, what do they call it, foreshadowing.
Stay tuned for the lore drop.
Yeah, foreshadowing for what will be coming on the channel here soon. But enough of that, we've got to get into MotoGP.
There's a lot to get into. Where do you want to start?
Well, we should probably knock out Fantasy.
Okay. That's fair.
If we don't, we'll forget. Yeah, it won't be good. Fantasy for this week. I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you didn't do the worst.
That's true.
So there's always that.
That's true. Yeah. That's
half true. Your this, team didn't crash out.
This
so
other guy
that.
From USA did the worst this week. Which is okay. Anyway, our weekly point winner. So the winner for the week, weekly point winner. Where'd he go? Oh, last. There it is. I was looking at the average, which is very different.
I did that last week.
It's going to be, drum roll, Shaky Moto.
He's crushing it this season. They're crushing it this season.
Crushing it, but he's only in third place. So I will say not very far behind. You know, first place is at 1061, second place 1047, third place 1019.
Yeah, they're close.
So they're all pretty tight up there, kind of like our current leaders in MotoGP, kind of wild. I think they all have very similar teams. But anyway, 184.5 points. He has only used one out of the three boosts. Has used two out of the three boosts, has one left.
Interesting. This early two boosts down?
Keep that in mind.
There might be hope for me yet.
I mean, there is a certain person that is pretty easy to put a boost on.
Well, that's true.
So, anyway. But yeah, there is still hope. If you're still holding on to some boosts out there, you can absolutely do that. Anyway, Shaky Moto, please hit us up on Instagram at Shaky Moto Podcast. Send me a DM. Or on Facebook, either way, we'll get you a prize sent over for your weekly point winning. And just a reminder, there will be a bigger prize at the end of the season for the total overall point winner, who currently, sitting in first, is Shifty from Canada, like I said, at 1061, followed by Camhead at 1047 and Shaky Moto at 1019. Right behind him, down fourth, we have Sad Satellite at 941, and myself at 936.5, and then
we'll stop there. Yeah, you can stop there. It's fine.
There are some people further back in the points back there. But yeah, I mean, to start out with MotoGP, can we just talk about the current standings? I just want to
the current standing, the current new upstanding. Sure. For the championship?
Yeah, we'll cover top five because it's actually kind of interesting. Top six, seven.
Okay.
Eight.
Okay.
Top eight.
Top 10 it is.
I'm sorry. I just kept looking. I was like, whoa. All right. We're going to cover the standings real quick. If you guys are following MotoGP, you probably already know because they go over them every week. But I just want to talk about them real quick and talk about the point gap. So we have Marc Marquez sitting in first place at 171.
No surprise there.
No surprise. Everyone's kind of been tracking that. Cool. A whopping 22 points behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
32?
Yeah, that's his brother.
No, 22. 250, 70. Yep. Is Alex Marquez. Okay, cool. We saw that. Another 29 points behind him is Pecco Bagnaia.
Yep.
And then it's flopping all the way down. Those guys are all over 100. 171, 149, and 120. All the way down at 85 points is Morbidelli. Didn't see that coming this year, but he's there.
Yep.
And right behind him is DG and Antonio.
So VR46 holding out 4 and 5 in the constructors.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So we got top four Ducatis. Surprising, not really cool. But right behind DG and Antonio, which this is the big surprise, which is why I wanted to go to at least 6th, is Zarco.
It's actually both of them. Both of the Frenchmen.
Yes, both of the Frenchmen. Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I then said 7 and then I said 8 because there's a rookie down in 8th. But specifically between 5 and 6, there are only 2 points. And between 4 and 5, there's only 11 points. So realistically, between a Honda and being 4th in the championship, there's only 13 points right now. With a Frenchman on a satellite Honda. And that is wild. That's why I wanted to cover that. Part of that definitely came from this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's where you would like to start.
We could start there. So for a second week in a row,
mm-hmm.
I was excited to see Fabio Quartararo qualified on pole.
He did.
Really excited to see where that goes. And then, it really didn't go anywhere, unfortunately.
It didn't, no. So, we were in France, Le Mans. Lama, whatever. However you say that, I don't know. I never know. Because Lama just feels weird. Laman is, like, weird. Lamans is obviously wrong. What is it?
I don't know. You said it different enough times. Now I don't know why I would be saying it. In the
us Americans over here never know it. Everyone pronounces it wrong. Lemons. Laman. Lamar. Lamar, I think. Yeah. Anyway, iconic racetrack over there. It's great. I love that one. It's kind of nuts, man. You look at the layout, and it is actually like super.
It's
simple.
Flowy, curvy too. When they showed like the track preview.
Yeah, but then there's like those S's, and the yeah. S's get people every time, every time. But yeah, Q2 won in practice. I think it was in practice actually. We had Mark Marquez set a lap record, all time lap record, which didn't get beat the rest of the weekend. I believe because we started running into, well, no, there wasn't any rain in qualifying. Maybe there was a little bit. I don't remember. I wasn't able to watch it. But we ran into rain in the races. And, I mean, you're not going to set an all-time lap record in a race anyway. But in Q2, Fabio Quartararo took out a first, followed by Mark, followed by Alex, followed by Aldeguer, and then Vinales, and then Bagnaia. And then all the way down in 11th was Zarco. So Zarco made it to Q2 and qualified 11th. Not bad, but our two Frenchmen are in Q2 and Quartararo sitting on pole. So France is super happy. We got a record-breaking crowd. They're up there. They're happy. It's awesome. Insert the sprint.
Yeah, I wanted a podium for Quartararo so bad. And then like you see him get passed. Then you see him get passed again. Mm-hmm. Then you see him get passed again. Mm-hmm. When Mark passed, I was like, all right, sweet. I can live with this, whatever. Alex gets him a like. He's still on podium, it's fine. And then Aldeguer, the rookie, comes over. I was like, all right, listen here.
Stop messing with my boy.
You put that back. You give that place back right now, so help me.
It was, yeah. I don't disagree, it was a little sad. I mean, I kind of saw it coming. The Mark thing, I think we all saw it coming, right? Yeah. Mark wants it. And the issue is that, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but Quartararo was not in championship running.
No.
This year.
Not even close.
Yeah. He's not in the running. Mark is. Alex is.
Like we said, P7.
Yeah, 7. So
I'm like red, blue, red, yellow, yellow, green, blue.
Yep. Blue.
Yeah.
You know, it puts Mark in a weird spot because, like, Mark is also just, he's a racer, he's a winner, he's got to win, right? So we expect that out of him, which was interesting on Sunday, and we'll get into Sunday later. But we come into Saturday, and Mark has set an all-time lap record, but wasn't able to follow that up in qualifying, for whatever reason, is now second on pole, or on the grid, right? Comes in second in the grid, and is behind a Frenchman on his home turf, who obviously wants this win. But he's also holding off his brother behind him, who is actually 1 point ahead of him in the championship standings right now.
It's like he's picking his battles. Like, that's the real battle he has to do, is control Mark. He even mentioned, alluded to something like that in the post-race interview on Sunday.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, guy's too far ahead of me, I gotta control Mark. That's the championship ones we're fighting with right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially
right.
After like a couple Sundays of losing Sundays.
Which was super smart move. We'll just keep talking about Mark for a little bit. On Sunday, I think he played that very, very well. Saturday, sprint day, went and won a sprint, set a new record. Sprints are relatively new, so all the records I kind of just laugh at because I'm like, whoa, yeah, crazy.
All-time new record. Yeah, it's been like 36 minutes we've had this, man. Come on.
Yeah, we haven't been doing this for that long. Why? Like, who cares? But anyway, first person to win 6 sprints in a row. Maybe he'll just keep it going and win every single one this year. That's arguably most people.
That would make it a tough act to follow.
So I'm saying, and that's also how Jorge Martin won the championship last year, was with sprint wins, because this one made Bagnaia all mad about it. Anyway.
Well, Bagnaia can't play about sprint wins this year, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, that's the man in red, right? Marquez ran a great sprint, won it, cool, good to go. In the Sunday, he did what I think he needed to do. We'll get to more about Sunday later. Let's get through a few of the riders first, then we can talk about Sunday as a whole.
All right, well, move down the list. Alex Marquez, doing Alex Marquez things, solid performance. P2, came in, held it down, finished the race, got the points.
Did.
Cinched it up.
In the sprint.
Yep. And then Aldeguer got his first podium for the sprint.
He did.
The rookie.
He did indeed, which is awesome. Yeah, I mean, Gresini team this weekend on Saturday.
Solid performance.
On Saturday.
2-3.
Yep, they were doing great, and they were happy about it. Aldeguer's, I think, girlfriend was sitting. They keep showing his girlfriend more than any other girlfriend this season, it seems like. Anyway, showed her. She was all nervous. And, I was talking to my wife, and I was talking about, like, it still amazes me how much excitement the entire paddock gets over a single race win.
Yes.
Like,
especially if it's a team that's like starved for wins.
Yeah, so that I kind of understand. Like Honda, LCR Honda on Sunday, crazy, right? That's
I forgot the team principal's or the head guy's name. Was it Lucio? I forget. But whatever his name was, him,
mm-hmm.
I was anxious watching it, and I was watching him getting more anxious, him being anxious, and I was getting more anxious
because of him.
The one part where he points to the board, he was like.
Yeah. He's out there on the wall.
I'm like watching him, like, yes. I'm like, Michael, calm down. We need to bring this home. You've got like 20 seconds. Calm down.
Man, that man did not calm down.
Because he did that at like a 12-second gap. Oh, sorry to hop on to something. He did it like a 12-second gap, and then by the end of the race, it was more than that. He did not calm down.
He did not. He did make me nervous. At the end, though, the last lap, I was, we're going to jump all around today. It was a crazy weekend. I apologize. But the last lap, this man could have wrecked the bike, picked it up, and probably still finished in first.
It's kind of like when Alex crashed out, got back up, still in P6, because those gaps were gapping.
They were huge.
What kind of fed into that.
Yeah, that's the Sunday we'll get into is just the drama. But
it was just so much.
Yeah, Alex had a great Saturday. Grassini had a great Saturday. Aldeguer up on the podium. I mean, pull up a sprint results just so I'm not going so super crazy.
Yeah, after Aldeguer was Quartararo in fourth, he just missed out on the podium. Yep. It broke my heart.
Yeah, it was a little. It was sad.
But Marquez only finished half second behind Marquez, though, his big brother.
It's true. Yeah, it was definitely a tighter weekend, and that's what makes Sunday so interesting to me is that Alex. I've been thinking for probably a couple weeks now, or a couple rounds now, that realistically, they're saying the only person that could beat Marc Marquez is Marc Marquez.
But right? It's starting to look more and more like Alex could give him some decent competition under certain conditions.
Yes, but also if Alex can just keep the bike up,
yes,
it's over. Yeah. Because if Alex keeps the bike up every round, which now we're back into kind of playtime where we can mess around and make some more mistakes from different people, but I had this weird feeling that Alex was just going to bring home a absolutely perfect season, a perfect P2 season,
and then get the championship.
Smoke the championship because everyone else is playing around with first DNFs, so... But
just think, if he didn't crash out and he had finished, granted, we're doing the whole make-believe if he had finished P2, the points gap between him and Marquez would be almost negligible going in weekend to weekend. And if Mark had crashed out a couple more times, it would have been easily Alex.
Yeah,
that's how he got the 1 point lead in the first place.
Yep, absolutely, right? He's just holding back P2.
With the occasional sprinkle of a little first place in a GP weekend.
Yeah, well, because Mark... crashed.
Hey, I call it like I see it.
But I agree. He's been having a great season. Sunday was unfortunate. And then he like you said, he gets up, gets back in sixth, and then comes right back around and I believe in the same spot. The second wreck, did you see that one?
The high side?
The straight up and down and the bike just see ya.
It was like the bike has left the chat.
There had to be something on the track there.
Yeah.
Because
Because you watched the replay, like.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, the rain is always interesting, right? I'm not great in the rain. I don't like it. The guys that are good in the rain, they're crazy. They're awesome. Rain is often very much about, like, consistency, but also.
Like, feel and how you can manage your grip and, like.
Yeah.
How aggressive can you be while still being conservative to an extent? It's like really weird. It's like a fine line.
Yeah.
And as the track dries up, like how much more you can get away with?
Yeah. The kind of those altering conditions, that's what makes it super crazy. A lot of times in the super wet, everyone's pretty good. But in these like,
the mixed
it's
conditions,
wet, it's drying, yeah. It's wet, it's drying.
These turns have more water than these turns. This you cannot take the normal line through this turn. You take this other line for these reasons.
I did notice no one was out on the curbing though.
We're not doing that again. We've all learned our lesson.
I noticed very specifically there was actually a large gap between a certain person and curbing on the track.
We're not. What was that, Coda?
Yeah.
Hit that curbing with still little pockets of moisture in it.
Yep, and it just...
Because the problem is, like, depending on the curbing, like, the ideal line sometimes bleeds into the curbing just a little bit.
All of them, 100%. They're on the curbing all the time.
Yeah.
Those curbings are different pavement, different surface, and paint. And as soon as paint gets wet, if you ride motorcycles, which I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast or you watch this channel, you ride motorcycles, you know.
We're talking about they're just here for the dazzling commentary, right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the great entertainment part. Yeah, my bad. But if you ride at all, you know that, man, there's sometimes I've been out on a racetrack in the rain, and the scariest part is coming over the line to enter the pit.
Yeah.
Like, the ridge had a pretty long one, and every once in a while you'd cross over it, and I did that in the rain a couple times, and the bike's, whoosh, yeah, it gives you a quick little...
It's like, hey,
there's no grip here.
Don't do that.
So, I don't, you know...
Not having the four tires to rely on is like, oh, yes, it's just these two in line.
Yeah, and sometimes when they're in line, in Alex's case, you still can't rely on them. It was wild. If you didn't see that wreck or you didn't catch it while you were, I don't know, making a cheese sandwich or something.
For that RP Bagnaia, for that sprint race.
Yeah, the sprint. We'll get to Bagnaia here in a minute. I got some words. But yeah, Alex, the second wreck killed me. The first one, I was like, okay, it's tough because he's on my fantasy. I actually kind of, I'm proud of him this year. Not necessarily an Alex Marquez fan, but I'm proud of him. He's doing great.
I am a believer. I am a fan of Alex Marquez. I've really enjoyed watching him this season. Mm-hmm. I have low-key been a fan ever since that one clip. I'm pretty sure it's him doing that whole leaned over, drag. Feels
okay,
the weather.
One clip on Instagram cannot decide a racer's fate in your heart, head.
He's not my favorite racer, but it's one of those things where it's like, I'm new to MotoGP. I don't know anything. That's one of the clips that got me into watching MotoGP is seeing that. It's like, it's that. The Jorge and like the Jorge Martin just like this by the pavement, like those two.
See, my favorite Jorge Martin.
I knew
video.
Those before I knew who these people were.
Yeah.
Or like any of the teams that I knew those clips, and I was like, "Yo, that's pretty cool."
That's fair. I'll give you that. My favorite Jorge Martin video is definitely him in shorts and a t-shirt, laying in his corner. He just lays down. He's like. Yeah, that'll work.
They got to rename that corner the Jorge Martin corner.
The Jorge Martin bed.
Going into Jorge Martin.
Jorge Martin pit stop for a nap or something. I don't know. Oh, man. It's nuts. But, yeah, it was rough to see the first wreck. But at the same time, like, I'm like, perfect. That's what my boy needed, right? I mean, I've got a 93 flag up on the wall. I'm a Mark fan.
I appreciate the loyalty, the honesty.
Right.
You're faltering.
I haven't jumped the bandwagon yet. But then to see the second one, how hard it was, and two, that like I watched the replay and that bike just decided to not be up and down anymore, which I'm sure you hit a random spot on the track where there's a decent amount of rubber piled up or something, or the opposite, I don't know. It was super wet. It breaks. Who knows?
A lot of factors.
Yeah, I haven't done any follow-up on it, but it really just, like, from a very outside perspective, it looked like he came in, he started braking for the corner, and the bike just said, see ya, and flopped him into the air. So he didn't get up from that, had a DNF on Sunday, lost a lot of points there. That's kind of where this big gap opened up. Now, the second part of the big gap opening up, and the next rider I want to talk about is Pecco Bagnaia.
Was not a good weekend for him.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He qualified, what did I say, down in sixth in a sprint. Well, he made it all at one lap. And, you know, shout out to him for Sunday, because he did actually run back over the bike. But I believe on Saturday, he, in fact, did not. And it just cracked me up, because I've literally talked about this so many times, and I'm going to say it again. There are some riders that put the bike down and recognize the importance of trying to
get some amount of points.
Get something. And you never know what could happen. There could always be a red flag with a restart where, yeah, you're still at the back of the grid, but...
But your back of the grid isn't like 20 seconds from the lead. It's like you're the back of the grid.
Or we had a rainy weekend. There could be a flag-to-flag moment, and you could be the guy. Like, there is a point on getting back in on the bike and riding your best to finish it. And also, in my opinion, you kind of owe it to the sponsors. Because a rider of Pecco's caliber... Doesn't matter where he is on the grid. He's a factory rider. He's going to get camera time, right? Like Ducati and those sponsors pay him money to get camera time. That's what it's all about. So they can get their name out there. Turns out if he wrecks bad and then he gets back in it, he's going to get camera time.
True.
Even if he's 20 seconds off the lead, he's going to get camera time on that bike.
I also personally believe that Pecco is of the caliber that he could, depending on the crash, I believe 100% wholeheartedly that he could claw himself back in some amount of points. And the narrative that creates from the underdog, fall behind, trying to work hard, get back, like that narrative is something everyone, haters and fans, can get behind. Mm-hmm. Haters will see because, like, I don't want to get back into points. Fans love it because I want to see him get back into points. Either way, that's screen time.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm saying, right? So, like, you owe it to your sponsors.
Like, what was it, last week? Mark Marquez, he got back up in the points. Was that last week?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. He wrecked out, got back up in the points, and made it so, like, instead of having a 5-6 point lead, Alex only had a 1 point lead because Mark made it far enough into the points, and people were wrecking out, too. You never know how many other people are going to wreck out where you might not even have to work for it.
Especially in the mixed condition. Well, he did get back up on Sunday, but the, like, stuff like that, mixed condition, you never know what happens.
Absolutely. So
that was a dog pile.
Yeah. Sunday.
Going into turn one.
Sunday. Good old Sunday. But anyway, that was him on Saturday. Now, turn it around on Sunday. Shout out to him. He finally did it. He ran over the bike, picked it up, and actually rode. And despite the mixed conditions and everything else, I think he went in for a new bike twice.
That, he wasn't the only one.
No.
There was so much shenanigans between swapping from a slick bike to a rain bike or a rain bike to a slick bike, starting the race, getting the double long lap penalty. Halfway through the race, like, actually, I think I will have the other bike, please.
Yeah, I don't know.
Please and thank you.
So Bagnaia, like, because it was open pit the whole day, I guess, I don't know, he went in after his wreck, got a new bike, and then came back in later for another new bike, I think on rain tires, because I think he went and traded for a new bike on slicks.
Okay.
And came back in again for rains. I don't know. I just saw him in the pits multiple times. But anyway, he did finish the race. So shout out to him for finally doing it. However, he finished right outside the points in 16th. So all that stuff I say about you could get in the points, and especially like of all the days.
I think he could have gotten the points if it wasn't for all the bike switching. But that being said, other people switching bikes as well. So it's like.
Yeah, well, and honestly, like I'm glad he did it, and he should have done it because one more person could have wrecked out. Yeah. Like we saw, like, I was not holding my breath for Mark not making a mistake out there, or Zarco, or literally anyone else. Like,
when I saw the gap opening up between Zarco and Mark, I thought Zarco's pushing, but I also think that Mark Marquez is like,
yeah,
bring it home, get the points back. Especially after he realized that Alex wrecked out, it's like, okay,
after that point, absolutely, there's no reason. There was a point though where in the beginning, during the long lap, double long lap penalty thing, and everything else, that he was about to be overtaken by Alex.
Yeah.
And then somehow flip it around. I don't know if that was a switch in his head where he finally was like, all right, now I got to just go. I don't know if that had to do with the fact, because the other thing too is that
I was loving all of it. I was
it was great. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
It was like, I was lining him up. I was like, hold up. Wait, is what I think is happening?
No, it's not supposed to happen.
Or is he just playing with him? Like, what's going on? What's going on here?
The other crazy part though too is, like, we saw all these tire options. Part of that was also medium and soft rain tires, which we definitely saw play.
Yeah, like, it was factor. Like, for a while, it was like the 1-2-3 had one tire combination and the 4-5-6 had the other combination.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
well, and the issue is that you go out on, and I might be getting my compounds wrong, so I apologize for that. I don't know rain tires that well, and compounds and temperatures always throw me off, but different compounds want different temperatures.
Yes.
So in the rain, it is almost even more important, but almost even, like, not even almost, it is way more difficult because we saw this race go from no rain to a little bit of rain to less rain to a lot of rain and back to a little bit of rain. So what we saw was this track basically dry, start to get wet, dry a little bit, and then get really wet. In that point where it's really wet, you have this, we'll call it a medium tire, maybe it was a soft that they were running, that wants this warm temperature, and now all of a sudden the track's so wet you can't actually get it warm. Because even a rain tire, you still have to warm it up, right? You still put warmers on it, and while you're out there riding, you still want it warm. You just don't want it to overheat, which is why they suck in the dry and everything. Anyway, it's a whole bunch of rain tire science. Because
it overheats, it wears out, you lose your sipes.
Yeah, they get stupid slippery because it's a completely different rubber compound. Yeah,
so now you see the water, you can't sipe the water away. Congratulations, you're running unsticky slicks.
Yeah, which is
the worst kind.
Actually slick.
Yeah.
not what you want.
Unironically, slick, no grip.
Yeah. Slick tires. Slick tires. Slick. But anyway, so we saw some weird things with that, and I don't know if that was what was plaguing Mark that day on Sunday, but it gave that kind of, it was kind of fun, though. It was fun.
With him and
Alex battling.
I loved this weekend. RIP Cordero, but other than that, I love this weekend.
The craziest part to me was I cannot imagine racing that race and not being, like, actually anyone. I don't care who you are. Zarco, the only man that, like, it made sense for, I think, the weekend made sense for, or the race anyway on Sunday. Did he go out on rains?
He didn't change his bike.
Right. He got in the wreck, and well, he He sidelined the wreck.
He didn't.
He was affected by the wreck.
People are sliding out. He's like, oh, let me go into the gravel over here. Came back on track, gained a few positions, everybody wrecking out, and then he just put his head down and he got it from there.
Yeah, and then he was already on wets, which maybe that's what helped him out so much, is maybe he wore those tires down in the beginning. Like, I don't know what Zarco was thinking, but anyway, we had, like, rain in the setting lap.
Strategy.
And then the rain stopped. So you had a whole bunch of people that were on rain tires, and they took off from the warm-up. On the warm-up lap, they took off from the pit.
Yeah, on the siding lap, they decided what they want. They said the pit lanes were closed.
Yep.
And then half the grid came into the pit lane. So they started.
They reopened it.
But they let them come in, but it was closed. That's why they all got the double long lap penalty, because the pit lane was officially closed. But they came in and swapped their bikes anyway. So on the formation/warm-up lap, they all left from the pits. They grid up from there, but when they grid up, they had their double long lap, and it was up to them when to serve when they wanted to serve it. But some people did that and still changed bikes.
Most of them.
Yeah, changed bikes back.
Yeah, they went back to rain. So they come out on rain. It's dry. Oh, shoot, we can't be on rains. The majority of the grid runs into the pits, gets a dry bike ready to go. Leaves from the pits, like you said, goes out, has a double long lap penalty. There were like 5 or 6 people in Zarco that stayed out on rains and said, whatever. They made the right call, 100%. Made the right call. It might have screwed them over later, but whatever. But they made the right call.
And Zarco somehow profited.
Yeah. Zarco somehow fixed that perfectly. I don't know what he was doing with tires that day, but it was perfect. But anyway, then they get back out there. They start doing double long lap penalties. And I'd say about halfway through most of them doing their double long laps, all of a sudden it starts raining. And that's where we saw Quartararo. And I forget who was with him right behind him. Oh, man.
And that initial crash into turn one?
Yeah, in the race.
Was that Mir and Bastianini?
No, so not the initial, sorry. I'm talking about when the rain started coming back down and Quartararo wrecked out. The initial crash in turn one was Bastianini wrecking into Bagnaia and someone else. Yeah. And we can talk about Bastianini sucking again later.
I want to be in Bastianini's corner, but this was not a good weekend for him. and I have nothing to defend him with.
Yeah.
I still like him, though. It was just a bad weekend. We all have bad weekends.
Sure.
And I'm not going to unpack it at all.
Okay.
Because his performance as of late does not support my narrative. So I choose to ignore it.
It's not the right story.
Yeah.
We'll wait till the right story comes along.
Yeah, and then I'll sing his praises.
Sure. All right, sounds great. I'll stand by. But
2 years
later. We had this double long lap penalty stuff going on. Most people had served him. Mark had, I guess, missed one, so he still had one to do.
It was also, when that one was coming down, people were like blowing that corner, and like they were taking an extra long lap penalty.
Alex took an extra one because he blew the corner and just happened to basically, it wasn't actually a long lap.
He was in between the long lap zone, but he went wide
in the long lap penalty corner, which was like, whatever. Yeah, which of all the tracks to do a double long lap at, that long lap penalty does not seem near as bad because it's just the same corner,
just
a little bit
wider.
Yeah, a little bit longer turn. So, but anyway, we started seeing the rain come back down, and this sparks half the grid that was on slicks decides to go back in and get their rain bikes now. Aldeguer stayed out there for an extra lap. I thought for sure he was going down, being a rookie and all. Didn't go down.
Did not.
Came in, got a rain bike, cool, and gets out there and starts racing again. And then we just saw some of the weirdest racing I have ever seen in my life, which was the MotoGP of France 2025.
Had to be there.
Had to be there. Hashtag wet.
I wish I watched it live, like with other people, so that we could all just like be there together, seeing all the madness that was unfolded in real time.
The biggest thing that I was thinking about was like, we had people getting lapped out there. We had people coming in at the most random. Like, usually when there's rain, 20 of the 25 riders at least come in and get their bikes changed.
Yeah, it was staggered.
And then whatever. It was so random. And in that, you had a couple of people that were already on rains, a couple of people that were on their third bike, and a couple of people that were doing long lap penalties times two. Yeah. Like, it was...
Somebody got an extra double long lap penalty.
It was Bastianini. Bastianini got a double long lap penalty, not because of the start, but because he took out two other riders in the wreck in turn one. It was absolute madness. And what I can't imagine is, like, you are racing at the premier, like, the top The top of the top in the world.
The premier class.
Yeah, the premier motorcycle racing class. The best of the best in the world. Generally, when you're out there on the racetrack, you don't see gaps that big. You don't see riders getting lapped.
Yeah, testament to that gap was like, Alex Marquez crashed out, got on his bike, got back in the race, and was in sixth place.
Yeah.
And there was an appreciable gap ahead of him and behind him.
Yeah.
To the next group of riders.
And there weren't that many groups either. Yeah. The only grouping was around Aldeguer as he was taking down the entire freaking field. Yeah. But
once again, shout out to him.
Can you imagine being at that level and having like track day traffic?
It's the rain, man.
Like, but
it's the rain.
But it wasn't just the rain. It was all this random, I'm going to swap my bike now. I'm not going to. I'm going to take my long lap. I'm going to swap my bike again. I'm going to, whatever. Like, anyway, the moral of the story is, if you think it might rain, stick to your gut. Especially if you don't have any, like, play in the world championship. Zarco. Because I can only imagine he was like, what's the worst that happens? I do 10 laps on these rain tires. It doesn't work for me. I trade bikes and take a 15th. Okay. Best case scenario, it rains. It did. No double long lap penalty.
A win is a win.
No slick tires. No trading bikes. Just me and the racetrack. And then at the end, like I said, had some perfect tire setup where he was just banging lap times. Because we came in, I think it was lap 15 or 16. He was at a 10 to 12 second lead. And there's 25 laps. At that point, yeah. Dude's out on the sidewall, like literally hanging out on the track. And it's just like, hey, slow it down. Behind you is Mark Marquez, who's great, but you've got time. He would need a half a second. I remember the commenters talking about
how Mark Marquez was a couple tenths faster than Johann Zarco was, but Zarco had like 8 seconds to play with at the time, and that lead only grew. And even Marquez talks about it when he realized that he had enough race left to catch up to him. So he put his head down, knocked out a few bangers of laps, a couple of tenths, and then the gap was only bigger. And he was like, "Oh, I gotta control Alex. He's there. I gotta control Alex. I'm not catching Johann Zarco." So that is a testament to how much he was cooking.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Zarco was going nuts. Shout out to Mark for actually reeling it in and just saying, "Okay, let me just play my game," because he played it right.
Yeah,
let him go win.
A Marquez has to bring this bike in today.
Yeah,
and it was him.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Zarco absolutely just there's no way he didn't look over and say, "What, you want me to slow down right now? Are you kidding me? Cannot turf. No. What's worse that happens? I put the bike down. Who cares?" And
that French crowd, they were loving it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They do talk about, and I don't remember. It's so Zarco is such a weird name because he was on a Pramac bike. Yeah, he was on the Pramac bike with Martin for a while.
Former Modelli.
Yep. And he all weekend they kept talking about how good of a rain rider he is. And I don't I couldn't remember the rain races that he did well in. I think there was one where he did very well, but it's very funny because they said the same thing about Oliveira. Miguel Oliveira, they were like, amazing rain rider. He did win some rain races back in the day or do very well in them for what they expected. Right? Like, you get these random, the rain always brings out these random people. You're like,
I love watching motorsports in the rain because, somebody said, the rain is the great equalizer.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And you definitely see that in across all forms of motorsports.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what we saw this weekend a little bit, but because of the weird conditions.
Yeah, the double long laps and the bike swapping didn't really lend to that. But it, like you said, it led to some wacky scenarios and conditions. But also, so for KTM, Maverick Vinales was really consistent this weekend. Came in fifth, I think, in both.
Yeah, the sprint and the race. I just checked fifth in the race. I'll check the sprint real quick just to fact check. Yep.
He was.
And fifth qualifying. Wow.
That. 5-5-5.
That's impressive on Sunday,
yeah,
to say the least.
So he did get passed by Acosta for fourth in the race. Shout out to Acosta. But the fact that, for these last couple weekends, Vinales has been the lead KTM bike satellite or factory, period.
I think
Acosta's been up there, yes, but Maverick has been consistent.
So
these last couple weekends. I'm curious to see, where we go with KTM as a whole and Maverick moving forward, because it's still only a couple weekends.
It'll be interesting. Maverick is an interesting character, in my opinion, because he got in some trouble.
Back in the Yamaha days?
Yep, with Yamaha. He had a factory Yamaha ride.
So, One thing when I first started getting about a GP, I watched a program called There Can Only Be One, mm-hmm. which kind of gave like the race recap or the story recap of like the previous season leading up to it. And so I watched like the season where Jorge Martin lost out to Bagnaia for 2 years in a row. I saw those recaps.
Yep.
And I think one of those Maverick was still with Yamaha at the time before he went to not that. It was before that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I watched that season as well.
It was a while ago. I guess if you were watching the recap, I want to say it was right before Bagnaia went to... Yeah, because he spent 2 years with Aprilia. So it was right before that.
Yeah.
Interesting story, because this man enters MotoGP on Suzuki, and then...
That was before my time, Suzuki.
Yeah, before my time even, right? Wins a race with Suzuki, goes to Yamaha, wins some races with Yamaha. In fact, when he was with Yamaha, it was actually him and Rossi together on Yamaha prior to Fabio ever getting into factory.
Huh.
That's where Vinales was. So in Vinales, I very specifically remember I hated him because he was a contender against Marquez before Ducati got good. Right, like real good. So he was kind of in that battle during the Rossi fallout. Rossi fallout happens, and I don't mean fallout like it. I mean fallout because his last couple years were not that great. He didn't have the best performance out there. He's still Rossi in here and there, but especially his last season, I felt real bad. I think a lot of that was just Yamaha not having the bike anymore, and maybe he was just done. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Rossi. I hate him.
Interesting.
I'm just kidding. Huh. Kind of. I do. Details. We're not getting into that. Anyway.
Interesting. All right. Strong opinions. All right.
Yeah. But Maverick's on Yamaha, and then some thing happens, says some words. Yamaha says, no, you're out. And it was like borderline MotoGP saying, no, you're out, if I remember right. And fact check me, please, audience. Throw it down in the comments. If you got the story, I want to hear about it because I don't remember exactly, and I haven't done the research in a long time. This is just coming to my head now, but... Something happens, Yamaha says, you're out of here. And he says, okay, whoa, holy cow. Okay. And I thought he was done. I thought he was done for good. I didn't think he was that great. I thought he was done for good. Insert
Aprilia.
Aprilia is like, hey, we got a spot open.
Yeah, because wasn't it him and Aleix, right, for a bit?
It was. So, and that didn't open up till the next season. But they said, hey, we got a spot open next season. Factory ride. We'll pay you good money. We think you're a good rider. Come ride with us. Now, the interesting part about him going with Aleix, who had been at Aprilia for a minute, was Aleix was also on a Suzuki with him back in the day. So these are two teammates that have ridden together before, two Spaniards, now on Aprilias, on a factory ride. Again, wins a race with Aprilia.
Looks like we're getting the band back together.
Oh, yeah. Man wins a race with Aprilia. So now, he's the first guy to ever win a race on three
manufacturers.
Different manufacturers, which is kind of nuts. And I believe it was either
no Ducati inflation here.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that is what is very interesting to me is he's the only rider that has stayed away from Ducati and still been consistently, once he gets a bike, well, very inconsistently, once he gets a bike figured out, pretty good.
Yeah.
And that is my biggest issue with him is his inconsistency, and I think that's why he's never been an actual championship contender. He's had the equipment under him before. He can't ever
string it all, like put it all together.
Yeah, every time. Yeah. There are definitely weekends where this man comes out and he does it all great. He's got the package underneath him. He's got it in his head. He's ready to go and he does it. We saw it, you know, last year in Coda. We've seen it this year.
Went from the Top Gun to the Batman.
Yep. What's interesting is that it does feel like he is picking up the KTM much quicker and he is meshing with the KTM very well. And especially with where the rest of the KTMs are on the field. That's what's surprised to me. You've got Pedro Acosta, who's now been on that bike for 2 years. You've got Brad Binder, who's been on that bike since the creation.
Yeah.
And then Bastianini, we're not getting into that. But now we've got Maverick, and he is consistently, like you mentioned, the best operating KTM rider first year on the bike. So, I don't know. Before the season started, and I don't want to be this guy that's just like, oh, I know everything, but I expected him to win a race this year prior to the season starting. Season started, KTMs were doing terrible. Him, Bastianini, all of them, they were all doing terrible, and I said, okay, there's no way. If KTM doesn't even have the bike figured out, then Maverick's not going to make it. He's not consistent enough to put it all together with a bike that
does it. With a bike or the subpar bike, yeah.
And that was my
especially
opinion.
In a field being dominated by Ducatis at the time. With six Ducatis in the grid at the point?
Yeah.
Damn near locking out 1 through 6?
Yeah, basically, with Albuquerque like, kind of floating around, maybe in sixth, maybe not. And that's what I expected. And that's what I feel like we saw for about the first two rounds. But then Maverick kind of started stepping into that bike. And I don't think KTM has really made any big changes. I don't think the bike has gotten better.
He's just adapting to it.
Yeah, and adapting.
He understands it now
very quickly. And what will be very interesting to me is I still don't think that bike has it. I am slowly turning my thoughts on whether or not Maverick will be able to get the win this year and keep that record going.
To get the first man to win on four manufacturers.
Well,
I want that for him.
No, yeah, it'd be awesome, and it's gonna be very hard to beat. That's what's cool. The three is already hard to beat. If he could add a fourth on top of it, it's like, okay, here we go. But what does that, like, I struggle with it because I don't want to say that Maverick is good, but if all the other KTMs are terrible, and then Maverick brings home a win.
It's the opposite of Ducati inflation. It's KTM deflation.
Maverick inconsistency inflation?
No, it's like,
this bike looks good on this weekend because Maverick, they will say it. If the KTM wins a race with Maverick on the bike.
They'll say it's Maverick making the bike look good.
No, they'll talk about how KTM has it. They figured something out that, you know, they will praise Maverick. Absolutely. I promise. They always do. They praise the rider and it's great. The rider does most of the work. Great.
Well, but if Maverick brings it home, they'll say KTM figured it out.
Yeah. Even
if it's Maverick
and not
a bunch of gaps. And then the rest of KTM in the back where they normally are.
I guarantee there will be comments about how KTM must have figured something out and has a bike that's ready to go.
Well, also, there is an amount of, like, riders set up specific to the rider. Not a whole bunch, because it's still, like, mostly stock factory bike. Oh, man, it's interesting. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's weird. I would love to see Maverick. Of all the riders, I would love to see Maverick on a GP24 right now.
And then we'd know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hasn't gone to Ducati at all.
If you put Maverick Vinales on Pekka's bike, it would be a very different season. Maybe. But the issue with Maverick Vinales is the maybe part.
Yeah.
Because
he's got to get through the inconsistencies first.
Inconsistent. But my question with that, because I do believe it is mostly Maverick being inconsistent. I do. But at the same time, there's a second thought in my head that wants to say, maybe the bikes are just super inconsistent and he just happens to fault to it. And he's actually...
The bikes in the KTM are bikes in all the bikes in general.
All the bikes he's ridden. The Ducati being the one that's not inconsistent. Which,
that also being the bike he hasn't ridden yet.
Yeah. So I don't know. Let us know in the comments. Maverick Vinales, yay, nay, who knows?
Better than Bastianini.
Yes. I am not a big Bastianini fan. There's a certain person that I know that is not a huge fan, so they're not going to be mad, but I'm not a big Bastianini fan anymore. Not that I ever really was.
Sold all your stock in Bastianini?
Yes, I did. I mean, I sold all of it last year when he left Ducati. I was like, yeah, that's out. That's gone. Kind of like...
I washed my hands of you.
Kind
of
like Jorge Martin, which was a good call.
It's not like he wanted to leave. They just said, we got the best there is.
That's true.
To ever do it.
That's true. Which surprised a lot of people and made a lot of people very mad. And
I mean, I think for Ducati though, like, not to get on the Marquez bandwagon, like, he's a good rider, but like, that is such a no-brainer.
Kind of, except that without Mark being on that factory ride, let's say Mark went to Aprilia and Jorge was still with the that doesn't work because Jorge would have gone and taken the factory ride, most likely. It would have never been Bastianini. But let's say that Jorge and Mark both went to Aprilia because for whatever reason, right? Say Ducati was just like, no, we're keeping Bastianini. You guys can go somewhere else. And Jorge and Mark both go to Aprilia, which Aprilia obviously doesn't necessarily have it this year. Maybe we haven't seen Jorge at his peak and we won't. And that sucks. Maybe at the end of the season, we'll finally start to see it. But I don't know. Holding out for next season, Aprilia and Jorge having a good package. But Bezzecchi, I think Bezzecchi was a little bit of Ducati inflation back in the day, and we're not seeing it anymore. I do believe that if you had put these other two very, very good riders on Aprilia, and even if Aprilia had the package, that Bagnaia would still be winning.
Because of the Ducati.
Because Mark wouldn't be there taking the wins from him. I think that has had a huge play on his mental riding and everything, and that is mostly what we're seeing, honestly. I think that Pecco has always shown me that he is kind of an emotional rider, and I think the emotions are playing really, really big this year.
Fair enough, but even last year when he was going up against Jorge Martin back and forth, every time something bad happened, he would lock in, put his head down,
he would.
And then prove to you why he's the robot.
He would, because he was the leader of the team. He had the entire garage behind him. He was the king. He was the star. He was the man in red. He was the guy.
Now he's just a man in red, not the man in red.
He's not Ducati's crown anymore. He's not the star.
That's gonna weigh heavy on him because he's got to know, like, if he doesn't start performing, like,
I don't think they'll get rid of him at this point. Plus, he's got a contract for next year already, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they gotta get rid of him, but at first, if he just does subpar this season, does subpar next season, you're only as good as your last. It's like most sports, especially where you have like a limited amount of seats per team, is what of like a sport where it's like, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Where you could be a multi-world champion, but if you have a couple bad seasons in a row, we start the teams will start looking at other people, especially like the contracts, like single year, multi year, like multi year just means usually 2 year, sometimes three, sometimes four,
sometimes five.
Yeah, but like you see all the time, like in other sports, like F1, bring it back up. But like if you have this many championships, and I'm the team boss, and recently you have not been performing to the level of lesser teams have, it starts to like look really bad. It's like, what am I paying all this money for? Yeah. I don't care how many championships you've won in the past. That's you did it for you. What can you win for me now?
Exactly. No, I agree. Which is kind of why we're sad to see Jorge go to Aprilia.
Yeah.
People were sad to see Luca Marini go to Honda. Actually, people thought that was going to be great for him because he got a factory ride.
Not all factories are created equal. All right, let's stop playing. Let's stop playing games here.
I saw that and I was like, great for him, probably for the paycheck. Terrible for him for his future in motorcycle racing.
I'll take a satellite Ducati than a
That being said, Honda. Relatively new rider on a factory Honda has kept the bike up more often than the ex-world champion who's been there longer. So, I don't know.
What do you do?
Wild. But I don't even remember what started all that.
Maverick Vinales.
Yeah. Bastianini, Pecco. I do think that Pecco would be holding it down, or at least like giving a really much better fight if Mark wasn't stealing
his wins,
the spotlight, the garage. Yeah. I think that's had a huge weigh on Pecco's outcomes this year.
Yeah, because he's in third.
Yeah, big time. Pretty far back. This weekend did not help him at all. That's what I'm saying. Like, this weekend opened up a gap in the top three that puts Mark in a much more
dominating spot.
Yeah. So, Mark, this weekend did exactly what he needed to do. A few more solid
performances, he can run away with it.
100%. 100%. That's, it'll be interesting. I think Mark's probably got a couple more wrecks going to happen this year, maybe.
No doubt.
For some reason, I thought that Alex was just going to bring home a perfect season. Yesterday, not quite.
Hey, look.
Flukes happen. I'm not mad. Yeah. It happens. I'm not trying to, like, crash talk or whatever. But
It balances out for his P1. Yeah. That's not how that works at all.
No.
It's not even a balancing feature, but still.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't do that. But it just kind of, like, it brings the championship back to this, okay, we're back to normal. It used to be this crazy. Everyone was wickedly close.
I love that, because when it comes down to the last race, it's like, oh, bated breath. Who's going to be the champion?
Which is great. I'm hoping that's how it goes for audience retention purposes. Yeah. However, for Mark Marquez fan purposes, I have to say that I'm hoping for more of what we saw this weekend. So.
I think of the top three, I think my favorite is objectively Alex, because I like to see what he's doing. I like to see like the story. And because my man's Fabio Quartararo and Jorge Martin are not up there.
They're definitely not.
Yeah, not even close.
Definitely not. We'll keep an eye out on the news for Jorge, figure out when he is coming back, what that's going to look like. The biggest thing with Jorge, honestly, is I just hope he takes his time. And when he comes back, he doesn't. I don't, like, this is going to sound weird. I don't care that he takes his time to recover off the track. I care that he takes his time when he gets back on the track and he has the mental fortitude to, because in the past, Jorge has been a little bit greedy, iffy, pushes a little too hard sometimes. That's why the last 2 years were so close between the two of them, arguably why he lost the first season.
Yeah, he would get greedy and crash out.
He lacks the racing maturity for a championship winner, if you will. If he comes back and maintains that lack of maturity, it could be very dangerous. And that's not what I want to see at all. I want to see him come back and actually race. And I really, honestly, as a Mark Marquez fan, this is hard to say, but I think in 2027, when we get the new rules, which we're going to keep talking about more and more as it comes up, I think that Mark is kind of going to
Get out of the sport?
I don't know if he will personally, but I think his time will be gone at that point. I think his time will be over. The Mark era will be done, and we'll be moving into a new era. I feel like Jorge has a good opportunity to enter the new era as a top contender. Right? We're going to obviously get some rookies coming in. We're going to get some manufacturers that might pop out of nowhere and have it made. There's random KTMs out in the world that are already kind of 850 cc's and tested. So,
and there was rumors or talks of BMW also joining MotoGP at some point, possibly too, right?
It's a little more than a rumor. Yep, it has been. BMW is trying to figure out how to do it. They have said we are going to do it. We're going to enter in 2027 with the rules and Toprak. Razid
Toprak, long name.
Yeah, Toprak, long name, has mentioned he wants to be there sooner than later.
I see some clips of that guy. That guy is wicked.
Yeah.
I've watched some of his braking leg clips, and I'm like, man. I'm about to watch World Superbike.
It's too much. It's too much. Toprak is something else. That man can, he can stop a bike with back tire all the way in the air across the finish line and still win the race. Yeah. He's intense. Yeah. He might enter MotoGP. He's a little old. I think that the 2027
But he could also enter MotoGP with BMW, just help them like build their program.
And that's like most people's predictions. There's been a lot of talk. A lot of people were expecting that because he's been on the BMW now. Obviously, good rider, good caliper rider. The crazy part about
hands down.
The MotoGP rule change, which like I said, we're gonna talk about this a lot more as it comes up and comes closer, is that the rule changes are pretty large. And what we've seen is that the street bike, and i.e. the rest of the world's racing bikes that aren't these prototype bikes from MotoGP, have adopted a lot of that MotoGP technology. We've got all these crazy electronics and all of this crazy winglet stuff going on some of these road bikes. The winglets are going to change. The electronics are going to change. The ride height devices aren't going to be allowed anymore. It's a lot more than just we're going down to 850 cc's and we're going to have lower horsepower.
So I understand that MotoGP is like essentially like the prototype bikes. So you tell me like these prototype bikes would become more closely resembling what the street bikes would be?
So the prototype bikes...
Not like
bikes,
a street bike, but like they will be more in vein of like a production... I don't even want to say that. You know what I'm trying to get at though, right?
I think I know where you're going. Is that they're almost going to take a step back and come back towards the street rather than the street headed towards them.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of what we will see, especially because we're 2 years out. And in that time, these manufacturers are going to use all of the technology that they've tested and created and put as much of it as they can into their road bikes. Because that's still what they're racing Moto America, World Superbike, British Superbike, Australia.
Because even Moto America, they're moving towards... How do I phrase this? They're moving... From my view, it looks like they're moving toward bikes that are more in line with production models available today. Example would be you see more V2s in the 600 class, and you're starting to see R9s, I think, take over where the R6 used to be.
Okay, so the super sport class, absolutely. And Moto America is a bad example to look at. You're much better off looking at
World
Superbike, British Superbike, and all of them. But... In Moto America, specifically in the super sport class, absolutely, yeah. The R6 has been outdated forever. The R7 might have supposed to have been replaced that, but it was a twin, so it wouldn't. But the R6 has been competing against V2s and 750s that have been tuned down to be homologated with the R6s. But everything you race in Moto America, World Superbike, British, Australian, all those has to be homologated. I.e., even the like World Superbike superbikes still have to resemble and have a lot of the same parts as the street bike produced from the factory. So these factories, it is good for them to produce a bike that would be sold to us that is very competitive out on the racetrack, right? So when they're over in MotoGP and they get all this testing, they're going to put that into their street bikes because they also want to win in World Superbike, and they want to... It is much easier to sell a motorcycle that wins on Sunday than to sell a motorcycle that has the same name that wins on Sunday.
Fair enough.
If that makes sense. Like, yeah. If I see that Toprak is out on this BMW M1000RR with these giant wings, I'm going to go want to buy that bike. But if I see that Pecco Bagnaia is on a GP25 with 50 billion wings, and I go to the Ducati shop, and there's a V4S with two wings coming out the side.
Best I can do. Two wings, best I can do.
Yeah, I'm like, well, what am I not getting here? So
the sauce.
All of that stuff that we use in MotoGP is good for the factories to bring down to their other bikes. They've tested the technology. Can we put it into a street bike and whatever else? The weird part now is that, like I said, MotoGP is almost taking a step back. The factories, I think, maybe, I don't know, manufacturers will still continue to go up. The weird spot for me, what I haven't figured out yet, is that we're taking a step back in all this technology, but we're also taking a step down on engine size. So are we going to see leader bikes actually completely disappear? Or is World Superbike and all the manufacturers going to just stick with leader bikes forever?
They're iconic.
They are. This could be the end.
That might be hyperbolic.
It's not there yet. But it's definitely possible.
I don't think leader bikes will go away. I think they might get diminished, but I don't think they'll ever go away. There's just something visceral about leader bikes, and people want the sauce.
They used to.
There are people who's like, oh man, I rode dirt bikes, or I've never ridden a bike in my life. What bike do you want to get? M1 S1000 RR, R1. We have R1 at home.
That is true. Those people are actually way more few and far between than you would think. Most people, when they go out and they're like, yep, I'm ready to start riding a motorcycle. Most people, and in fact, actually most people that I talk to, you mention a leader bike and they're like, whoa, absolutely not.
I don't know. Maybe just social media's got me messed up, but like, a lot of people, when they are like, I want to get a bike, in my experience, I think some people want, it's like they get under the impression, like, hey, I need to keep up with my friends, and my friends have big bikes, I will get a big bike, and whatever happens, happens, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, fortunately, but like the average person starting, I feel like, at least that I would talk to, like, was not interested in getting an R3.
Interesting. I do know a lot of people like that. I think that the bike market has done very well to playing to the average consumer.
Like and for example, like the R7 gets shit. Like when the R7 first came out, it got shit on because it wasn't the old R7 and it wasn't faster than R6. So it got shit on. But like it's sold like hotcakes, granted.
Yeah, everyone bought R660, huge.
Yeah.
R9.
But before that, like before that huge. Was there, it was like, why get a 650 when you could just get, you know, a 1000?
But people like the
ZX10R.
Nah. People like the controllable. Everyone wants the best of all worlds, which is why we're seeing things like the Z900, yeah. The MT09, the MT07. Those sell way more than anything else in the world.
That is true. The naked now that bikes, that category
the
is
naked
being
bikes
made,
that are in between 600s and 1000s, and they have the torque, and they're great around town, and they're more upright, and they're comfortable. We're seeing those sell like crazy.
Yeah.
So from a manufacturer standpoint, the best thing you could do, Yamaha is doing it, is take the bike you already have, put race fairings on it. They've done it twice now. It's done great. The Fair R7, enough. The R9, they are killing that field. They came out with MT07, MT09. The crowd loved it. The crowd said, can we get this in race bike fashion, please? And they said,
yeah.
Yes. Here's some clip-ons. Here's some race fairings. Should we retune it? Nah.
Fair enough.
Well, what about the R9? Do you want to retune that? Nah. Give it to them. They can tune it if they want to, and they will. And that's exactly what I think that is the future. That's what we're going to see. The issue is that not many other manufacturers are hitting that as much. Kawasaki is. They got their Z650 and their Z900, and I would expect to see a ZX9R. Here soon, honestly, but Kawasaki's weird because they came out with a ZX4 RRRRR and they've got 95 different million ninjas.
I low key want a ZX4
RRR. They've got a Ninja 250, 300, 400, 500, 600, 650, 650.
All right, to be fair, I don't think they still make the I might be wrong, but I don't think they still make the 250 and the 300. Like, it's the way their sport bike market is set up is like their entry platform is the 400, which sells really well. Then you have like the next step up, also an entry bike, arguably, maybe not, Ninja 650. And then in the like the sportier kind of go fast boy lifestyle, you have the ZX6Rs and the ZX10Rs for the leader bikes.
Mm-hmm.
You still have like the Ninja like 1000 variation flick, but I guess that's full blown more sport touring.
I would not be surprised if in the next 2 years the ZX6 is gone and we have a ZX9.
That is the longest running. I think it's like what the only current. No, it's not. You still got the Honda, right?
Gixxer 600.
True.
will be around.
I guess just Yamaha stopped making the 600.
Yeah.
Like, well, they stopped. They just made it, you know, track only. And you can still put lights on it and make it street legal.
Sure.
I'm not sure why I want to do that. Keep it for the track. Let her sing.
With the R1 suspension. That was the other thing that changed on that. They got rid of the R6 suspension. They're just like, here you go, race bike. To keep it homologated, which was pointless because then they came out with the R9, which is in the same class.
It doesn't think the R7 is going to sell like hotcakes.
Yeah. Anyway, we're getting very off topic.
Maybe the bikes are going away.
It is about time we close up. Wait, we'll leave.
No rider of the week.
Did you have a rider for the week?
Don Zarco.
I had the same rider.
It was going to be Fabio Cordoara until he wrecked it.
I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was like, there's no way.
And if it wasn't Don Zarco, low-key, it was going to be Aldeguer. I was very double podium. Shout-outs. Much respect.
Shout-outs, yeah. I was thinking about rider of the week. We also are running low on time, so we're kind of already past our
All right.
We'll hit you up with the rider of the week next round. Next round, just for your guys' information, is going to be in... I actually just needed to check for myself. I'd say it's for your information, but... TISO Grand Prix of the United Kingdom will be over in Great Britain.
Oh, Silverstone? That track's iconic.
It is an iconic track. That'll be in 2 weeks? 12 plus 14? Yep.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, so... We'll see you guys in Stable B in 2 weeks after watching Silverstone, and we will come back with a rider of the weekend. Hopefully there's a little bit different story. This week was kind of difficult. We had the same rider. That was the majority of the reason why we didn't do it, but you can expect that, and we'll probably hit it up a little bit earlier in the podcast episode. In the meantime, please chew on, are leader bikes going to go away? Will we see a ZX9? Will it be a ZX9 or a ZX9R? And what is the future of MotoGP going to mean for our current rider lineup? Those are the questions we'll leave you with for this week. We thank you all for watching and or listening. Once again, please give us a subscribe on YouTube. Go follow us on Instagram, Facebook. And also, click the... What do you do for Spotify? Is it follow? Is it iHeartRadio? It's like whatever podcast platform you're listening on, there's a button. Press the button that says that you want to keep listening to this one. Press the button.
More.
Click the button. And we will keep producing. If we don't see the button clicks, we can't produce. That's all I got. You got anything else?
Button clicks will feed us.
Feed us with the clicks.
Ah, yes. We'll go strong with
the
click.
I will adjust my preload. Anyway, we'll leave you on that note. Thank you, guys. Yeah, once again, we'll see you all in the next episode.
Ground at 100 miles an hour.